Chapter 24. When we finally arrived at Jaguar, I was holding my breath, even after we could see the planet was not a smoking ruin and that all the orbiting facilities were operating normally. Slowly, I let out that breath after Skippy announced Pup-Tart was still there and still active. It would take him a while to verify the Sentinel had not been hacked, so I flew down to the surface to formally transfer command of the base to my replacement. Yeah, bullshit. I wanted to see Margaret and my boys. The transfer of command ceremony could take place over video conference. I did not actually have to be dirtside. Not for that, anyway. The boys were at my parents' house. I flew down to the landing pad near my official quarters to see Margaret. She was at our house with her mother. Somehow, Margaret had become hugely pregnant since I last saw her. Maybe I shouldn't have said huge. My bad. She waddled from the kitchen when I walked through the door. Damn it, she did not waddle. She simply swung her hips a lot more than she usually did because her belly... I'm gonna shut up now. My wife was more beautiful than she had ever been, even when she greeted me with, "Joe, what the fuck is going on out there?" "I love you too, honey." "Sorry." She rubbed her belly. "It has not been a great day. Somebody," she patted her belly, "did not want to sleep last night, so I didn't sleep." "Sorry." "It's not your fault." She leaned forward and kissed me. "Now, husband, tell me, what the fuck is going on? An elder starship raided the moon?" "That's what it looks like." "Why? Were the rotten kitties flying the thing?" Skippy, thinks there is an elder AI aboard that ship." "Another Skippy is flying around the galaxy?" "Again, that's what it looks like. This AI can do some things Skippy can't." "Holy shit." She had to reach for a chair and sit down. Holding up my hands, I added, "It also apparently can't do some of the awesome things our beer can does, so it might all balance out. Skippy is checking that Pup-Tart hasn't been hacked. Don't worry about that," I added too late. "It is unlikely, and while he's here, he's also locking the thing down from updates except directly from him. He sealed off that vulnerability." "This other AI can hack into a Sentinel and turn it against us?" "No, that's a thing the other AI can't do." "Skippy did it." "Yes, and this AI, we're calling it Moon Raider," I rolled my eyes, "did leave logic bombs inside Roscoe and Bubba. It did that to disable the Sentinels because it wasn't able to take over them." I told her everything. She was no longer a star operator, and her security clearance was much lower than mine, and she had no need to know, and fuck it, she's my wife. I value her opinion. I value her input, her experience. We talked for a while, then her mother came back and cooked dinner, and the three of us ate. It was late for me, as my body clock was on ship time, so we went to bed early. And woke up early. Dropship engines at the airfield were spooling up at 0500 for an exercise. That kept me awake for half an hour. Then just as I was drifting off to sleep again, I heard the sound of soldiers calling a cadence as they ran past the house. Opening one eye, I saw it was 5:45 local time. Damn. When I was garrison commander, the Army started their morning PT at 0600 or later. Then people went back to barracks or to their homes if they lived off base. They showered, had breakfast, and generally didn't get gunned up for duty until 0900. That was back when I was in charge of the garrison, and I let the ground unit commanders know I wasn't fond of PT at 0530. That was also during peacetime. It wasn't peacetime any longer. Margaret rolled out of bed. No. Master Guns Adams rose from the bed and strode toward the bathroom. I used the other bathroom, including a quick shower. "How did you sleep?" I asked as we ate a quick breakfast. "Better, thank you," she mumbled while biting into toast. "You have a calming influence on our daughter." What I didn't say was that my wife tossed and turned all night and stole all the covers, so I froze while I slept fitfully. "I slept great," I lied, slurping coffee because she knew me too well. "Will I see you tonight?" "You'll see me today. I requested you be assigned to my security detail." She paused, a piece of toast in front of her mouth. "Joe, you don't need a security detail here, and you have to follow orders, Marine, and Colonel Andrus has assigned you to be my security today." "For what?" "To your parents' house to see the boys." unless you have something else planned. That is very convenient, thank you. Honey, my dropship is skids up at 1500 today, and I don't know when I'll be back. I want to see the boys again. She popped the toast into her mouth. In that case, we need to get dressed now. My mother had prepared lunch for us, even though I had told her I didn't have much time. Mom, thanks, but I have to leave in an hour to get back to base. Why? I twirled a finger and pointed it toward the sky. Catch a dropship. A dropship. From Valkyrie. Well, yes. A dropship that is under your command. She didn't phrase it as a question. It can't land in the side yard? Joseph, are you saving the world again? Sort of. Okay, I get your point. I pulled out my Z-phone and called the duty officer aboard Valkyrie, ordering the dropship that was pulling our personnel off Jaguar to stop at my parents' place to get me. That made my mom happy. It also made me happy, since I had more time with my wife and sons. Lunch got me so stuffed with food that I thought I would burst, and it felt like the safety straps of the dropship seat wouldn't fit around my waist. Under my seat was a bag full of plastic containers that my mom insisted I take with me. Fresh vegetables from their garden, cookies she had baked that morning, and leftovers from brunch. I had tried to tell her no, but my mom tends to be stubborn. It's good I haven't inherited that trait from her. Besides, it's hard to refuse her baked French toast with maple apricot syrup. It was tough saying goodbye to my family again. The boys were clinging to their mother as the dropship's engine spooled up and we lifted off. The pilots swung in a wide arc around the house, giving me one last glance at Margaret waving to me. Then the main engines powered up and I was pressed back into my chair. Hey, Joe, Skippy called as the dropship cut thrust and we went into zero gravity. Give me a... I clamped a hand over my mouth as my overfull stomach did flip-flops. Breathe deep and even, I told myself. Deep and even. Okay, I feel better. What's up? I discovered a mystery that I'm hoping you can solve. Oh, shit. Is this about Moonraider? No, nothing simple like that. This puzzle is a real head-scratcher. More of a puzzle than when your mother was putting food into containers for you, she had plastic bowls in one drawer and the lids in another drawer. Eh? My father likes to keep the kitchen organized like that. It took your mother 5 minutes to find three lids that matched the three bowls she gave you. Okay, those drawers could be better organized. What is your question? Of the remaining lids in that drawer, none of them fit the bowls in the other drawer. Yeah, it happens. How? I assume the bowls and lids were purchased together? They were. Skippy, this is like the sock mystery. Sock mystery? You know how in my sock drawer all the paired socks are tucked together? Yes, you're a good, organized little boy. Get yourself a juice box as a reward. I ignored his insult. In the back of the drawer is a pile of single socks that don't match anything. Yes, I have been meaning to ask you about that. Socks go missing, even aboard the ship. Whether I was on the Dutchman or Valkyrie, your little elf bots handle the laundry. They take the clothes from a bin in my cabin, wash and dry them, and a folded stack of clean clothes appears in my cabin like magic. It's not magic, dum-dum. I know that. The magic part is even though you have a submind or something tracking every single item of clothing, socks still go missing. Aboard a ship. It's not like they can get off the ship. So where do they go? I must admit I have never paid attention to that issue. You haven't? No. I set up submines to manage the dull stuff so I don't have to care about it. Can you ask that submind where the socks go? Seriously? I'm pretty sure those missing plastic container lids go to the land of lost socks. Fine. This is stupid, but... Huh. What? The laundry submind has also been wondering about how socks go missing. It doesn't know? Apparently not. The stupid thing must be malfunctioning. Ah, what a pain. I'll have to erase it and install you really shouldn't do that. Why? This is a mystery, Joe. I need to know the answer. No, I don't think you do. Leave it alone, Skippy. You can't be serious. I am. Understanding that kind of forbidden knowledge could screw with the universe. Forget about it, please. Fine, whatevs. Hey, knucklehead. The lid your mom put on the French toast container has come loose and maple syrup is leaking out.
Oops.
Spills in zero gravity could be a huge freaking mess, so I acted quickly, taking the container out of the bag and securely popping the lid back on. To prevent sticky droplets of apricot maple syrup from floating around the cabin, I licked the outside of the container clean. People in the cabin stared at me. Eh, they were just jealous. Well, shit, Joe. Skippy took off his hat to scratch his shiny dome. You got all worked up over nothing. I spit the toothpaste into the sink. What? It was the morning of the fourth day of the search, and so far the destroyers and sensor drones had found a whole lot of nothing. One major problem for us was that we didn't know how long Moon Raider had been active. If the thing had gotten access to Trips' space dock shortly after our Guardians moved the thing, then Moon Raider could also have pushed it as far as half a light year in the intervening years. Half a light year in any direction gave us a bubble of a full light year across. A lot of territory to search for a thing that was wrapped in a sophisticated stealth field. That was why the sensors were not looking for the station itself. They were tuned to map the movement of tiny particles in deep interstellar space. Microscopic grains of dust, even individual hydrogen atoms blown outward by the solar wind of nearby stars. I had suggested Moon Raider could be smart by making the space dock move at the same speed and direction of the prevailing solar wind, but Skippy had laughed and told me that only proved my ignorance. The area we were searching was beyond the heliopause of any particular star, beyond the sphere inside which the outward pressure of that star's solar wind pushed back the particles coming in from interstellar space. In the search area, there was no prevailing solar wind. The particles there moved randomly, bouncing off each other in a chaotic fashion. Any large object in that area would leave a detectable wake behind it, a distinct disturbance in the random movement of particles. Skippy was confident he could map the entire area if our passive sensors were sensitive enough and if Moon Raider gave us enough time to collect data. For certain, Skippy warned, if Moon Raider was in or near the search area, it had detected our destroyers jumping in and out. You were worried that Moon Raider would track a destroyer back to its star carrier and wait for the full squadron to return. I am worried about that. Just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it won't happen, Joe. It is unlikely Moon Raider is still in the area. Still? You mean it was here? It was. I don't know yet exactly when it was here, and the evidence is circumstantial, but I am highly confident it was here. What evidence? The shockwave and debris from an explosion. Based on the exotic materials detected, the space dock has been destroyed. The destroyer Ankang was given the assignment of being first to jump in close enough to collect a sample from the debris field. The debris field was vast, and no single ship could vacuum up enough material to provide a conclusive sample, especially as the debris was in the hard vacuum of interstellar space. The Ankang was equipped with a net, an actual physical nanofiber spiderweb net that would be launched away from the destroyer, extend itself to a diameter of 16 kilometers, and activate an energy field that would sweep up any material within its grasp. When the debris within the net reached a certain mass, that of 3 nanograms, the net would fold up into a sphere and shrink to the size of a basketball. The package would then be recovered, and the destroyer would jump away, then jump again, and again, and again, before it rendezvoused with its home star carrier. Why the extensive and time-consuming precautions? Because an elder starship might be lurking in the debris field, watching to see whether anyone was searching for the space dock. That was why a destroyer was being sent in to collect debris. The Ankang was expendable. Even the star carrier, both star carriers and all of their destroyer squadrons were expendable in the fight against the enemy-designated Moon Raider. Valkyrie was not. Confirmed, the destroyer's first officer said quietly. Weapons are offline. The captain acknowledged with a curt nod. All weapons were offline, the first officer saw on the display attached to his seat on the bridge. There could be no risk of an accidental weapons discharge while the net was deployed, and if an elder starship appeared, none of the Ankang's missiles, railguns, or directed energy beams would be of much use anyway. That was a comforting thought. While the destroyer would not be shooting or using any active targeting sensors, the ship's active scanners would be radiating energy to map the area. If the elder starship was somehow asleep, Ankang's energetic sensor pulses would wake the thing up. and pinpoint the destroyer's location like holding up a big shoot me sign. That was another comforting thought. The captain perhaps sensed his first officer's anxiety, whispering, "Ours not to question why, Zhao. Ours but to do or die." "Sir, the original verse of that poem reads," Zhao cleared his throat, "do and die. There isn't any uncertainty about it." "Yes, well," the captain's shoulders made the tiniest of shrugs. "I prefer to be optimistic." Raising his voice, he pointed to the countdown timer on the display. "Jump!" When the Maxalt's 73rd Fleet emerged from jump inside the moon's orbit, General Chang was in a dropship 50,000 kilometers from Earth, headed to an inspection tour of the cleanup effort at Moonbase Zulu. Specifically, he was in the tiny bathroom of the Panther dropship brushing his teeth to scrub a foul taste out of his mouth. To his embarrassment, his stomach had not dealt well with zero gravity and he had been forced to use the bag under his seat. It happened. Some people never got over space sickness. Some people had it initially, then adjusted. When Chang first left Earth for that initial over-enthusiastic mission to Paradise, the lack of gravity aboard the Kristang starship made him sick for 3 days, despite the anti-nausea meds. Then he had served for years aboard starships, with many zero-gravity episodes aboard starship and dropships, and only rarely experienced any stomach upset. Until that day, when of course he would be interviewed by several TV programs as the dropship approached the far side of the moon. What he needed was Mad Dr. Skippy, who was probably halfway across the galaxy, so he went with his next best option. "Grumpy?" he called on his phone.
"Yeah, what?"
"I have a problem. I am hoping you can help."
"You think you got problems? What about me? I'm stuck here talking to screeching monkeys all day, every day. You want my help? What's in it for me?"
"Nothing for you, but humiliation for Skippy."
"That's a noble cause. I'm in. What's the problem?"
"The space sickness pills Skippy gave me aren't working."
"Oh, is that all? No medicine works 100% of the time on you meat sacks. It's probably just an inner ear." "Whoa!"
"What?" Chang jammed the toothbrush in a shirt pocket as alarms blared in the Panther's cabin.
"A Maxalt's fleet just arrived and they brought party favors. A couple thousand railgun darts are in flight, aimed at—"
He yanked open the door as one of the pilots shouted,
"General, get strapped in! It's going to get kinetic up here!"
"Where are we going?"
The safety straps on his seat at the command console were supposed to automatically tighten around him, which they were more easily able to do if he stopped trying to help, he told himself.
"Anywhere out of the flight path of—"
"What the hell?"
There wasn't any need for the pilot to explain the source of his surprise. On the display, the cloud of angry red V icons that represented the railgun darts racing toward Earth had stopped. All of them. They weren't falling toward the planet. They hadn't turned around to slam into the ships that launched them. They simply were hanging dead in space, motionless relative to Earth. The Maxalt's war fleet was moving, and the display lit up with more icons. Those were orange V symbols for missiles. A lot of missiles. A whole lot. Those enemy warships must be sending every guided weapon they had into space, emptying their magazines to launch ship killers, dedicated jamming platforms, specialized missiles that acted as control and communications nodes to coordinate an attack, missiles that were supposed to take out defensive batteries. Basically, every guided weapon the 73rd Fleet had brought to the party was in flight. And none of them were going where the Maxalt's gunnery AIs had intended. The entire armada of missiles was curving around, lining up in an orderly fashion, and decelerating as they flew toward the UN Navy's main arsenal space station. A window popped up on Chang's display with a message from the DEFCOM Joint Chiefs. "Scenario Bravo, proceed," the message read. There was a longer postscript. "Have fun. You earned it." He smiled, cleared his throat, and took a sip of water from a squeeze bottle. Scenario Bravo indicated that Bubba had reacted as planned to the attack. The attempted attack, since the Maxalt's fleet never had a chance to do any damage. First, he instructed the pilots to turn back toward Earth, but slowly. There was no need for a hard burn. Then he toggled the transmit button.
"This is General Chang, commander of Earth's defense network. My birthday is not until next month,
but thank you for such a generous gift. Our navy was running low on missiles. Now we have plenty. There was no response from the enemy.
In case you are wondering why our sentinels have not destroyed your ships, that...
You wish to taunt us, an alien voice growled. Before you kill us.
We do not intend to kill anyone.
You,
even through the translator, the surprise was evident.
Do not?
No. We are annoyed that you foolishly test us again.
We are not foolish, the voice spat. Your defenses failed when your moon base was attacked.
That attack was conducted by an elder starship, as you well know. Do your people have an elder starship?
A lengthy delay, then...
No.
May I know your name, please? We will be engaged in negotiations, you and I. It will be good to know who I am talking with.
I am...
There was an audible intake of breath. The Maxolks was speaking, not using his vocal implant.
Of course.
Bubba had disabled all implants and taken away control of their ships.
Admiral Zovenk.
Thank you, Admiral Zovenk. I should explain our intentions up front so you understand your situation accurately and completely. We have taken all the missiles you launched at our homeworld. We will also be taking your ships, all of them. You and your crews will be taken to a thinly populated planet inside hegemony territory. We will then notify your government of your location.
I would rather die than go home in such disgrace.
That is your choice. Do your crews feel the same?
Of course. We are warriors.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you could consider that any disgrace of your mission belongs not to you or your valiant crews, but to the government that sent you into a hopeless situation.
Zovenk actually laughed bitterly.
My government will not see it that way.
Why? Your objective, I assume, was to test Earth's defenses. You achieved that objective.
The problem is not our failure. It is the humiliation that you subject us to. My people are proud, and you have wounded us. If I cannot strike back, I am expected to kill myself.
Chang considered that he had authority to use his discretion. A significant portion of your fleet is slow, heavy battleships dedicated to orbital bombardment. Our navy has no use for such ships. Would it ease your humiliation if we allowed you to keep those ships?
You would do this?
Admiral Zovenk, we do not seek conflict with the hegemony. We never have.
All we wish is to be left alone. Another laugh, not as bitter.
Left alone to expand your own empire at our expense. To establish human hegemony over the entire galaxy.
You are wrong about that, but you and I know that nothing I say here can change your mind.
Nothing you say can change the truth. The arrogance of you humans is astonishing.
My people have a saying. It ain't bragging if it's true. What you perceive as arrogance is simply facts. We have 3 sentinels. Your people have none.
You humans think you are safe because you have 3 elder machines? 2 sentinels. We know the unit you have designated as Roscoe is fading in power.
Roscoe was damaged and will soon be placed in reserve, that is true. Chang admitted, since there was no reason not to. That unit is still capable of great destruction.
Yes, all sentinels can destroy. What you do not understand is they cannot protect.
What do you mean?
Slow, choking laughter, like a cat not making much of an effort to cough up a hairball.
Your species is still young. Your ignorance can perhaps be excused. General Chang, there is a limit to the humiliation we can endure. A sentinel can protect your homeworld. It cannot protect your star. I warn you now. There is a point when my people will be forced to strike, to use our arsenal of elder weapons against your star. It will become a nova and scour your world.
Before Chang could reply, Grumpy interrupted.
He doesn't know about the protocol.
Grumpy, Chang waved a hand, though the AI's avatar was not present. I will handle this, thank you.
You are not handling it. Not properly.
What protocol? Zovank asked.
Tell him, Grumpy demanded.
Chang tried to cut off the AI's communications channel, but that worked about as well as he expected, meaning it did not work at all.
There is a time and a place for such...
All right, Grumpy sighed. I will tell this jackass. It's not like I have anything better to do right now. Or ever. Listen up, shit for brains. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Zovank. The humans, although they are monumentally more stupid than you can ever imagine, and they smell, it makes me want to gag every second of my existence. Even they are not that stupid. Come on, think about it. Humans have their own arsenal of elder weapons. They know what those things can do to stars. Of course they have anticipated that you spoiled children will lash out if someone smacks you with the truth that you are not special, the AI said with disgust. The United Nations here has what they call the Diaspora Protocol. If some idiot loser blows up the star here, and I am begging you, someone please do that so I don't have to listen to monkeys screeching at me every second of every freaking day. Oh, I hate my life.
Grumpy broke down in sobs. With a sniff, he continued.
If Sol goes Nova, or even just erupts in a huge flare aimed at this pathetic ball of mud, Roscoe will create a field to protect the planet. That won't last forever. It won't even last a year. But that will be enough time for a portion of the human population to be relocated.
To your beta site in the Sculptor Dwarf Galaxy, Zovank growled.
Yes. We know about that. Wrong, shithead. The humans here will relocate to several dozen worlds that currently belong to your people and the Rindaloo. You see, while Roscoe is holding down the fort here, the other two sentinels will go to those 38 worlds and remove your people, or the spiders. When I say remove, I do not mean the local residents will be going on a luxury vacation cruise. They will be dead. For a while, the smell of rotting kitties and spiders will be nasty, but that's not my problem, and I assume the new human colonists will deal with it somehow. Once Bubba and Pup-Tart are done with that task, they will go do something a lot more fun, destroying the homeworlds of both senior species, and then scouring clean every planet, moon, asteroid, or space station until every single Maxulx and Rindaloo are gone. As each of your habitable worlds are cleansed, a human population will be planted there. If you doubt that is possible, remind yourself that Sentinels were designed to operate for millions of years. They don't get distracted, they don't get tired, they do not stop. Originally, they were programmed to wipe out all intelligent life, but Skippy has narrowed their target list to just two species, your people and the spiders. In case you are wondering why any attack against humanity's star will result in retaliation against both senior species, well, then that proves you are stupid. Both senior species have elder weapons, and you each would likely try to blame the other. So if elder weapons are used against humans, you both will suffer. That means you both are responsible for each other's behavior. Got it? When Grumpy, Chang slapped a hand on the console.
Let Admiral Zovank consider what you have said. It is a lot to process.
Ugh, with his meat sack brain doing the processing, this could take all freaking day.
I heard what you said, the Admiral protested.
Do you understand, Chang asked, that this is a reason for you to live? To deliver our message to your government?
Perhaps, the admission was reluctant. Why do we not already know of this policy? This protocol.
It is new, Chang explained, relieved that his counterpart was not contemplating suicide, at least not immediately. A diplomatic mission intends to contact your people soon, and the Rindaloo. You now understand the basics of the message that mission will deliver.
Hiding behind sentinels has made your arrogance insufferable, human.
Chang snorted.
Your people would behave differently if you controlled such powerful machines? Perhaps not.
General Chang, you should consider that someday humanity might not be the only species who possesses sentinels.
That is possible, I suppose. Admiral Zovenk, I must speak with my superiors, and I am sure you wish to confer with your subordinates. Can you assure me you will not do anything rash while we negotiate the conditions of your safe return to Hegemony territory?
That will depend on satisfactory progress of the negotiations, but the Maxalk's warrior sighed. Yes, you have given me much to think about, much that my people need to think about. Contact me when your people are ready to discuss details.
The transmission ended.
Wow, Grumpy sighed. I thought that guy was gonna talk forever.
It was best, Chang knew, not to mention that Grumpy had done most of the talking.
I am sorry that speaking with us has taken up your valuable time.
Are you kidding? This was the most fun, the only fun I have had in years. Hey, question for you. Do you still need treatment for space sickness?
No. He realized his stomach had settled down. Though the dropship had gone through energetic maneuvers that could have upset his inner ears, and the Panther was in zero gravity again. I don't. Not any longer. Thank you.
All it took was an alien fleet to threaten your miserable planet.
That is not—
Don't expect me to summon a fleet of bad guys every time your whittle tummy is going flippy-floppy.
Please do not ever summon a fleet of bad guys.
Fine. Well, it's already back to being dull around here, and I hate every second of my existence, and, let me tell you what fresh outrage happened to me this morning. There I was, minding my own business, and—
I am sorry. I must speak with the Joint Chiefs now.
Those monkeys can wait, Grumpy snapped, and the dropship's communications antennas went offline. Oops. Now you can't talk to them. Don't worry, I'll have those antennas back up and running in, an hour or so. Anywho, there I was.
Half an hour later, Chang decided that space sickness, even a fatal case of the malady, was vastly preferable to being an unwilling audience for the world's grumpiest AI.